Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome into a numbers game. Today, February 20th, the day after President's Day. We hope everyone enjoyed their President's Day holiday. The program, of course, presented by DraftKings. I'm Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin along with us as well. We've got a great show. Kelly did a great job booking this show here. The Tuesday numbers game crew is stacked. We'll have Drew Dinsick coming up in this hour, talking a little NBA. We'll get set for the second half of the regular season. Also, Jim Root with the Three Man Weave podcast. They do a great job covering the college basketball landscape. We'll talk a little college hoops. I had a nice winner last night, barely skinning my teeth with Iowa State, but hey, counts as a win nonetheless. And then we'll finish things up in our final hour with Paul Carr. If you're into the footy, into the action on the pitch, it is heating up today. But I think a good place to start, Kelly, is what we saw yesterday transpire in the NFL, right? The NFL offseason lasted like a week. And now we are starting to all of a sudden hear rumblings from not only coaches, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, new GMs, new personnel, but disgruntled players as well starting to chime in. And it's always intriguing to me, Kelly, when players use social media to kind of lash out. And the story I'm referring to took place late last night when news started to trickle through the sphere, the NFL sphere, that Justin Fields has unfollowed the Chicago Bears on Instagram.
Oh, no.
I always laugh at these stories. We were talking about it before the show. Like, we know the Bears, they have all of the cards. They've got the assets. They've got the number one draft pick. They've got a decision on their hands regarding their quarterback that's entering year four of his rookie deal, which is kind of the year that you turn into a pumpkin. So we didn't know how the vibe was going to be this offseason. Again, it took about 8 days for it to start to turn negative. And Justin Fields unfollows the Bears on Instagram. And I don't want to, again, overreact to this story. But to me, it is always interesting how these players use social media as kind of this vehicle for what they want. But I don't think they always realize how it comes off. When you saw this story, and I texted you the second I saw it last night, I said, this cracks me up. We got to talk about this. What was your initial vibe?
Here's another one. I think it's that, but it's what you're talking about. I mean, it's their way. We're in a different era of media too, and we have so many players that have their own podcast. That is a very good point. They have different ways to speak directly to the fans and fan bases and you know, management, owners, right? All of that, and I think it's all kind of together. Whether we see the unfollows or the follows or the random tweets like the hourglass from LeBron a couple weeks ago.
LeBron is known for this.
Or hopping on your own podcast and making your statements very clear about what you want.
I would prefer that.
Right, me too. It's everything in this huge, everything in between from podcast to unfollowing people. And some of it, you're left trying to decipher what they mean more than others.
Agreed. I think the podcasting, The new wave is, and I think New Heights, the Kelce podcast, is kind of the gold standard of this right now. We're seeing Cam Newton, who's not a current player, former player, kind of have it. And I guess Jason Kelce might be a former player soon, but Travis Kelce, of course, still certainly is a current player. I think the social media stuff is these kids. I mean, let's be honest. Justin Fields, what, 24 years old? He was born in this century. I think he's, if not, you know, 1 year prior, he's basically born in either 99 or 2000, as I would guess.
99.
There you go.
Get it together,
Jim. Yeah, I mean, God, a whole year off. But is he Gen Alpha or is he Gen Z, right? I know the new one is Gen Alpha. And that one is like even more twisted and sick than the Gen Z. I'm an elder millennial for those interested, right? I'm about to turn 38. Actually, next week I'm turning 38.
Happy early birthday, buddy.
Yeah. I am an elder millennial. So for me, social media, right? I always tell this story. All the elder millennials do. I was on Facebook when you still needed a college email to get in, right? So that's how I view social media. It's about connecting with people. It's about staying in touch with people. I'm more of the Facebook generation than anything else. Justin Fields' generation and younger, they use social media as a direct communication tool in a very passive-aggressive way. And I don't know how this is going to play out over the summer, but the first shot was fired across the bow by Justin Fields last night. I don't know if he planned this out with his agent or his people, but it was calculated. When you unfollow, and I've done it before. I've done it with relationships. I've done it with personal friends. When you delete someone from social media, you are making a statement, whether or not you do it outwardly or you just hope that nobody notices. Well, when a professional football player does it, everyone is going to notice. The Bears, of course, have the number one pick. We don't know what their win total is yet. They are a deep, deep sleeper at the bottom of the odds board. Of course, they will get Matt Eberflus back in the saddle. It'll be Shane Waldron, the former Seahawks offensive coordinator, now coming into Chicago. I don't know what Shane's feelings are about Justin Fields. I don't know what Shane's feelings are about Caleb Williams. Of course, the Bears hold all the cards at the top of the draft. Throw Drake May's name in there. If you really want to get weird, Jaden Daniels. And if you really want to get weird, J.J. McCarthy. Although, according to Jim Harbaugh, J.J. should be the first quarterback.
He should be number one.
Taken in the draft. So that would be an easy choice for the Bears, right, to take J.J. Just kidding.
yeah, we did get the report yesterday from Albert Breer over Sports Illustrated's Albert Breer about talking about the Bears have received trade interest and that they were,
they have the number one pick. I would assume they've received a lot of trade interest.
And apparently there have been some chats down at the Senior Bowl, but
it'll pick up next month at the combine or whenever. I think it's the end of this month or soon in the next couple weeks.
I doubt that's what Justin Fields is responding to, but it's gotta be the writing's on the wall, man. Yes. I think when we talk about this first overall pick, it's all finances and it's tough, but it is all finances, right? Like there is, as long as you think that the possibility of Caleb Williams and Justin Fields are anywhere in the same realm of player, then it's move on from Fields and you go to Caleb Williams because you get to reset on a rookie contract. And it's just, it's too easy for the Bears to make that call unless they really think that Caleb Williams is somehow way worse than Justin Fields. It's the only way that I think this would change.
I think it's impossible to know which one of those two is going to be the better long-term decision. I think the upside, right? There's more unknown with Caleb Williams. With Justin Fields, the Bears have had him on their roster now for 3 years. They know exactly what he is. And my guess is, this is me guessing, right? This is me speculating on the social media speculation. Justin heard some things from those trade talks, from the behind the scenes, from his agent, and his agent probably said, you know what, Justin, I think they're going to move on from you. And that's why he said, well, I can't control that. But what I can control is who I follow on social media. Again, putting yourself inside the mind of a 25-year-old professional athlete is probably the hardest thing we do here on this network and any person who handicaps sports. Any person who is on the outside of the circle trying to put their brain on the inside of the circle, nonetheless, a 25-year-old athlete who has gone through a lot of ups and downs. I mean, frankly, it's been a long journey for Justin going from Georgia to Ohio State. Now, of course, the issues he's had in Chicago, he's had a brutal record win-loss-wise. And I'm assuming this is just him controlling what he can control. He can't control what the Bears do with the first pick. He can't control if they decide to pull the trigger on one of these trades. But in a very passive-aggressive way, he can control who he follows on social media. And obviously, based off of his view of the world and our view of the landscape, it's going to be news. And it is going to spark this maelstrom of tweets, of people commenting about it. And of course, us here on networks trying to figure out what the Bears are going to do for very different reasons. Why? Well, you can bet on the draft. You can bet on the NFL. And of course, the win totals, all of those things with the Chicago Bears are very, very relevant as they hold all the cards heading to a very interesting offseason. And it's ironic, isn't the draft in Green Bay? I think it's in Green Bay.
I never know this every year.
It's in like a really weird city.
Detroit.
Thank you. So, but still, it still holds firm. The Bears hold the cards for a draft that's in a rival city. It is a very unique. I thought Green Bay was it, but maybe in the future they'll have it in Green Bay. I thought Green Bay was on the list. But yes, Detroit, man. Detroit in late April. Have fun. going to that draft. All right. A couple other things on the docket. And again,
2025 Green Bay.
So Detroit and Green Bay in back-to-back years for the draft.
Yeah. How do they do that? Is that
the tour of the NFC right, North?
Yeah. Is Minnesota next? Like, how does that work?
Well, Minnesota just had, didn't Minnesota just have it? I thought, didn't Minnesota just have something? Maybe they just had a Super Bowl recently, right? The Patriots Eagles Super Bowl, right?
Super Bowl wild. Yeah. Yeah. That was, yeah.
The Patriots Eagles Super Bowl when they first opened that stadium. Again, the NFL, the offseason lasted 8 days. I thought last night that was like the first news wave we got of player disgruntled making his own thing. It's the first of many. We're just getting started, and the NFL offseason, it never sleeps. It lasted again about a week. Congrats to William Byron, won the Daytona 500 yesterday. I saw Steve Mackinnon actually had that on his sheet.
Yeah.
He did a column, and that was one of the racers that he had. I didn't watch the race, but I saw a lot of, wrecks on social media.
A lot of wrecks. I grabbed a piece of William Byron live. Nice. So that was nice. That live bet in Daytona is just so fun. I wait for the wrecks and then try to pick up long numbers. Hope your guys get through the wrecks and are able to restart. Well,
wasn't it like a photo finish on like the restart?
So there was, I don't know all the NASCAR rules. There was there was one full lap still remaining, Jared, but then there was a massive crash that occurred basically as they came across the finish line to start the last lap. So they just call the race then. He won under caution, whatever the hell happened.
I win a lot of my races under caution too. We'll recap a wild night on the ice and also some baseball, plus college hoops picks on the other side. A numbers game. Beeson.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball. VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our daily best bets emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. Visit VSiN.com/pro. Subscribe today. That's VSiN.com/pro.
Little breaking news coming in.
Yeah, what do we got?
Matthew Slater will be retiring.
Matthew Slater, special teams ace of the New England Patriots, decided that Bill Belichick's being gone is just too much for him to bear. So I'm joking. I don't know if that's why he's retiring. But
the most well-known non-kicker 100%. Special teams player probably has to be.
Besides Returner. Don Beebe, maybe that's the only other guy I can think of off the top of my head that has like the special teams acumen of a Matthew Slater. Speaking of fantastic acumen, our next guest certainly has that. He is the host of the Deep Dive podcast. You can find his work, of course, at NBC Sports Bet. He is Drew Dinsick. Follow him on social media at @whale_capper. Drew, it's great to talk to you, pal. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk to you through this avenue. So I'll just get a quick update. Have you washed the stench off you from Sunday's All-Star game just yet?
Well, it's great to see you again, and been a while, and appreciate the kind words off the top there. That was very, very nice of you. NBA All-Star game, didn't watch it. Didn't miss anything. Although like in the aftermath I did, and actually like I had a small bet on Haliburton MVP, All-Star game MVP, so I was kind of following the box score.
Sure.
While I was living my life, and and I was like, first half, I was like, oh, we're live. Like East wins this side, you know, he has a good case. But it turns out the handicap for the NBA All-Star game is pretty straightforward now. Pick the player who takes the most shots on the winning team. And I did not have Dame Lillard taking whatever he took 40 shots in that game. Ultimately it was kind of a hot mess. Really the whole weekend was a hot mess. Although like there were people kind of complaining about the light up floor for the Saturday skill stuff. Hey, you want to do something weird, different? You want to light the floor up? Go for it. Like, honestly, the dunk contest was super duper stale. Don't understand the scoring there at all. Like, really, like, I don't think the guys who are doing the scoring understand the scoring. the highlights were probably, I was, Intrigued, interested, excited, maybe even about the change in format for the Rising Stars, especially because this year's Rising Stars had so many just really high profile young players that you wanted to see play with other players. And it was an interesting format, although the G League team kind of snuffing Wimby's team in the semis was, you know, was kind of a disappointment because you wanted to see, you know, the two best teams go against each other in the final. But anyway, it was a weird weekend. It was a fine break for just betting the NBA in general. It can be a grind this time of year, surely. You know, that said, I always hate the All-Star break for personal reasons. My, you know, my strongest edge in the NBA comes from just player level and team level fatigue, and the All-Star game, All-Star weekend resets that hard reset for every team. So there's no longer an advantage coming out of this. But it is still a good time to kind of take a giant step back, take a look at, you know, what you know about these teams, you know, just in general, which players have really taken meaningful steps forward over the course of the season, how you're rating, you know, certain teams, certain lineups, trying to figure out which teams understand who their closing five is kind of important at this time of year. And then, kind of taking some of that knowledge and, trying to pick away at some of the, awards markets, pick away at some of the futures markets. So that's mostly my process over the last week, has largely been thinking about how will the rest of the regular season play out? What implications are those going to have for the voters and the awards? And then, just in general, starting to kind of soft price what I think some of the you know, likely playoff matchups are going to be, what I would make them and what I think market will make them, so that I have kind of a little bit of a head start on, you know, just in general taking sides in some of the series coming up in April.
Yeah, it's always interesting, I think, when we get to this natural resting point in the market to see how you view the rest of the teams going forward. So let's start with the awards markets. Let's start with the MVP. Jokic, the odds-on favorite right now. I think a lot of that, too, is just because of Embiid not being able to, you know, meet the requirement of number of games. So you look at this list. Is there another player on this list that can challenge Nikola down the stretch? I mean, obviously, SGA is the next one up, but you've got some big names. Giannis, Luka, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, these are guys that are stars on their respective teams. Can any of them catch the Joker?
Yeah, I think yes. And honestly, I don't think the market is correct in having Jokic this meaningfully favored over SGA. I think that is a pretty narrow two-man tier at the top of this market. And the case for SGA is like extremely straightforward. Like, he's the most efficient player playing right now with Embiid out, and he's playing on a team that likely gets the one seed. Like, there are many examples of that player winning MVP. Like, that yeah. happens a lot. And so I think if the Thunder continue to win, SGA's case is just going to continue to get better. And honestly, like, the Nuggets are kind of in a little bit of a funk right now. You'll remember last year, kind of, they had the one seed pretty clearly locked up by this time of the calendar. And they did a little bit of a lull in March. And that was really kind of what shook Joker's case last year. And honestly, like, they kind of can't even really afford to have a March lull this year. They need to play better basketball. They need to get healthier. Like, the Nuggets right now are pretty clearly positioned to go for, you know, to land in the four seed, which means you could draw a first round matchup against the Suns, which is not fun. You know, you could definitely find yourself on the road in the second round, on the road in the Western Conference Finals, and you're giving up one of your biggest advantages of trying to repeat as Western Conference championships if you're not making teams come through Denver. So like, I really am surprised that the Nuggets are playing this lackadaisically. And I think ultimately seeing them as a four seed, or if they could slip even further, if we're being honest, like, they have a tough schedule remaining. Like, they could definitely find themselves down in the, you know, on the road in the first round of the playoffs. And, you know, that definitely impacts their title chances. But even more so, like, I don't think anyone's dying to give, you know, Jokic the MVP again, if that's the situation they find themselves in. So for me, at least, Denver is beatable. Jokic is beatable in this market. SGA should be about co-favorite with him, if not small ahead by my numbers. And so I think that's probably the easiest and most likely correct bet in the market. Now, the guys you mentioned who could run him down, Giannis is kind of the one I had circled, but I'm losing a little bit of faith, hope, steam, whatever. That's kind of fading, because I just don't see the Bucks playing well enough team basketball to clearly cement the two seed right now. The Cavs are playing too well. The Knicks are playing too well. Although the Knicks, by the way, are hurt and starting to fade. So Milwaukee might have the three to themselves clearly, but you know, without getting kind of closer to the Celtics, I think Giannis in the Bucks case is a little tougher. All that said, Giannis does play a ton of really high profile games in the month of March and April. So he's going to have a lot of primetime exposure. If he does what he does, like he played against the Nuggets where, you know, he goes toe to toe with Joker and just buries him, then, you know, maybe his case gets a little bit more interesting as well. But SGA would be the look there. And I think everybody else is, you know, has enough cracks that they're probably drawn dead outside of maybe Luka. But, you know, his team needs to start. They need to put together just a hellaciously awesome stretch of winning basketball. And if you think they're going to do that, then you're just better off betting them game by game than taking Luka 11-1, in my opinion.
Drew, I'm gonna ask you a question that I've been doing a great job of avoiding answering for the most part myself. Sixth Man of the Year. Who the hell's winning that award this year?
Hey, man, what is going on with this market?
Uh-oh.
Like this is like there is no way that this should be some sort of two-way race between Monk and Tim Hardaway.
Wow.
Like I am stunned at the kind of confidence that players have in these two players being at the top of the field. For me, the bet is clearly Norm Powell. I think the Clippers and Norm Powell's role is starting to solidify with, you know, kind of the new rotation. He's in the closing lineup. He has started zero games, albeit he has played in every single Clippers game this season. That was something that was held pretty clearly against Quigley last year.
Yep.
So, you know, the fact that Norm Powell is kind of performing the classical sixth man role and that he you know, he's playing on a team that is winning basketball games and he is closing these games. And I don't know if Kelly, if you remember this, but right before the All-Star break, Clippers played against the Warriors right at the close there, and they were getting buried in the first half of that game. We go to halftime, everybody on the East Coast tunes out, goes to sleep. You know, nobody's paying attention. Everybody assumes the Warriors. When you wake up the next morning and the headlines are literally Norm Powell carries the Clippers to a fourth quarter comeback. It's like, hey man, you do that a couple more times, you're going to win sixth man of the year. And so his price in sort of the 11-1 range is where I got involved. He's like +800, plus 750 right now. I think that's still a bet. You got to be on a winning team to win sixth man of the year. Malik Monk could find himself in the 9-10 play-in. So just keep that in mind.
Our sixth man of the year, Drew Dinsick. Catch him on NBC Sports Bet, host of the Deep Dive podcast. Of course, follow him on social media at @whale_capper. Always great to talk to you, pal.
What an outro. Best of luck, man.
Love you, bro. Great stuff. On the other side, college basketball. We got Jim Roop coming up at the top of this hour, but I got a couple picks to get to before we ask Jim for advice. So maybe I'll give out some picks, and then Jim can tell me if I'm smart or dumb. Hopefully it's the former, not the latter. Numbers game. Peace in.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game powered by King Sportsbook. I am your host, Jared Smith, in for Gil Alexander today. He will be back. Is Gil back tomorrow?
A week from today.
So you get another cavalcade rotating
Benny Wilson.
I'm excited. Ben and I've got a big show coming up this Saturday and every Saturday going forward. Live bet Saturday. Ben and I are going to be in the saddle for the foreseeable future. In the saddle right now is our guy Jim Root of the Three Man. We follow him on social media at Second Chance Points. Always great to catch up with you, Jim. College basketball, listen, we are here. Super Bowl's over. That means all the football fans are flooding back into the college basketball. You got to work a little extra harder to get that number, huh?
That's the goal, man. You try to get as much value as possible. Yeah, there's more opinions coming into the market. So sometimes I even am surprised by a move where I feel like over the first couple of months, you kind of get a sense of, all right, market's probably going to go this way with the game. But because there are more people coming in and people with stronger money, I do think there's some sort of surprising moves that have made the market a little bit harder to read. But it does leave some entertainment value to be had. I'm just trying to read the board as much as possible.
I always find it funny because the overnights are something we like to look at and chat about. And some of the moves are very intriguing. What have you seen with your Missouri Tigers? They are a double digit home dog tonight facing Tennessee. Of course, we've heard the narratives, the trends, the top 10 teams on the road have really struggled this year. Straight up 37-37 for those top 10 teams against unranked opponents on the road this year. Do your Tigers have a chance to upset the Vols?
No, no, they do not. This is a nightmare season for Mizzou. Yesterday, the athletic director left for Arizona for a cheaper salary and a arguably worse job, not in the SEC. I think this not the full athletic program's in panic or anything, but given the fact that Mizzou hasn't won an SEC basketball game this year, it's just not a great sign with everything that's going around Columbia right now. They did battle over the weekend. They actually had kind of a game effort against Mississippi, but they're 2-12 against the spread at home this year. There's basically no juice in that building. It's been really bad, man. They're like bottom 10 in the country and against the spread record. And Tennessee's been dominant on the road. The offense has lit teams up. This is a stat that kind of blew my mind, Jared. Tennessee road games this year, they played 8. They're 7-1 to the over, and they're going over by an average of 18 points a game over those 8. And there's no overtimes involved there, so it's not like it's skewed by that. Maybe not as sharp defensively, but the offense has been there. They've been willing to get up and down. So I do lean the over there, but I'm also going to lay it with Tennessee. I just think they can name their number in this game. Mizzou has been a train wreck, like I said. And, you know, given the fact that maybe they've rolled over a little bit, despite a stronger effort over the weekend and getting Sean East back, Tennessee's still right in the picture for a one seed. They know style points matter. I think they blow out Mizzou.
Might have to put that the flag upside down, right? That's usually what you do when Missouri loses a game.
It's true, man. I actually do need to get that going again.
I remember that was a thing a couple years ago. I bring it back, Jim. Everything that's old is new again. All right. UConn and Creighton, great game tonight in the Big East. Of course, I think UConn has kind of deserved to ascend to the top of the college basketball futures rankings, futures odds, as they've kind of taken control of the country over the last couple weeks. Purdue falling off a little bit, but tight line tonight on the road at Creighton. This is a revenge game. UConn won the first game in stores. What should we make tonight in Omaha?
And I just think UConn kind of asserts itself tonight. There is, like, you know, the talk of how Purdue lost. Now, is UConn really going to like completely assert themselves as the team? Obviously, they blew out Marquette over the weekend. I think they take advantage of this this kind of narrative chance and just stamp the definitively, we are the number one team in the country, rise to the number one overall seed. I think there's still some debate of whether it's Purdue or UConn just because of resume stuff, but after this quality road win, I kind of think UConn gets up there. Creighton plays that drop coverage with Kalkbrenner. They let you get into the mid-range area. And Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, those guys are going to dominate in that area. Newton's terrific in that range. Starts to pull in some more help if Creighton has to get outside their defensive comfort zone and actually bring more than two to the ball in those ball screens. That's when UConn can really start to thrive. It basically turns into a shooting competition against Creighton. We call them the jump shooting Jays because they love to get in just shooting competitions. And I think we see that again, but I trust UConn to make those shots. It's going to be a great home environment. I think they're doing a stripe out in Lincoln or in Omaha. So yeah, blue section, white section, blue section. And it'll be great. But I think UConn just kind of shows that they're better and that there's not enough athleticism in that Creighton defense to bother UConn to the extent that you need to.
Quick follow up. Is there still value at the top of the futures market with UConn? Like that number is going to keep getting shorter. I saw +115 to make the Final Four at Circa. My guess is if they win this game, not a lot left other than that game at Marquette down the stretch for them to, you know, fall back a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of the quandary I'm in here. I've got a great portfolio of futures, but the one team at the top I don't have any of is UConn. And now I'm like completely settled in and resigned to the fact that they're the best team and the clear favorite. And I'm like, man, I wish I had some sort of investment on them. And I've been going back and forth, Jared, if I should get a little bit on there as like a hedge to my portfolio, but I haven't done it yet. And like you said, I don't think the price is going to get any better. So I might just have to be blindly hoping for an upset in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even if, let's say they lose this game tonight, even if they get blown out tonight, I don't see that number dropping down too considerably just because of who else is out there at the top of the heap right now. It certainly looks like UConn is the best team in the country, maybe Purdue right there, but definitely those two teams. Big 12. It's always interesting when these Big 12, traditional Big 12 teams go to a new Big 12 environment. And this Big 12 environment in Provo is unlike anything else because it's altitude and it's Utah and it's just a weird place to play. Baylor on the road tonight, catching 4 now. Again, you've seen BYU be the favorite bet out against Baylor. Does that surprise you with the Cougs?
Yeah, I just like general looking at these teams, my power rating, I would make it a lot closer to pick. But I think you got to give a ton for home here. Baylor going from West Virginia in the Eastern time zone all the way over to their first trip to altitude here with BYU's home court advantage. It's going to be a terrific, terrific environment at the Marriott Center. I think that the line has definitely accounted for that increased travel and going to altitude. But I still do lean to BYU. They shot like garbage at Oklahoma State over the weekend. Feels like a nice get right back at home spot where they've been really, really good all year. I think something like 11-4 against the spread. I got to verify that, but really, really good home team. And now given that tough travel spot for Baylor, you get a little bit of the sell high on Baylor, buy low on BYU. I think a lot of the narratives and stuff point to it. And then so did just some of the straight handicapping angles.
Yeah. I laid 3 with BYU last night, right before that thing jumped to 4. I think 3.5 still a fair bet. I saw a couple 3.5 floating out there. SEC action, Texas A&M, revenge game for them. Lost to the Must Bus back on January 16th by a point, and now they're laying double digits tonight at home in College Station against Arkansas. What's your vibe here?
Yeah, I'm going to lay it at home here with A&M. They've lost 2 in a row, now back home in front of the home crowd. The 2 losses were on the road. Again, I think kind of like a get-right spot here. Arkansas has been shorthanded. The lineups have been really weird for Musselman. He's playing some of his starters like 5 minutes and then going heavy bench lineups the rest of the game. Seems like he's still trying to throw stuff at the wall, figure out what works. I'm not going to say Arkansas has quit because they have been a little bit competitive recently, but it's just not a great environment to go to Texas A&M and play a team that's hyper physical. They want to beat you in what we call the extras, like getting turnovers, offensive rebounds, get more shots than you. If you're not game for a battle, then Texas A&M can kind of run you. And I just don't know that Arkansas has that in them right now. So I like A&M, like you said, getting the revenge, kind of the buy low spot off 2 losses back home. I like the Aggies there, even laying double digits.
Good game out west, late night, if you want to stay up. San Francisco at St. Mary's. This is a revenge game for San Francisco, but you're on the road tonight. St. Mary's won that one earlier in the season pretty handily. Can the Dons keep things close?
And I don't know. I just from a stylistic lens, I'm really concerned about San Francisco and how they score. St. Mary's is so disciplined defensively. They're a little like Creighton, where they want to only play ball screens with 2 defenders. They don't help off shooters. They don't give you open threes. So you need like really brilliant ball handling creators to score against them. Guys that can, you know, get in that mid-range, hit a teardrop or hit a pull-up jumper. I don't think that's really what San Francisco has. And I think that's why they struggled to score in that first matchup. Now, I'm not going to lay it with St. Mary's because they're missing Joshua Jefferson. He's out indefinitely. Arguably their third best player this year, their most versatile athletic forward. They kind of are a little more wing heavy without him. He's out indefinitely with a knee injury. So I'm not going to lay it with St. Mary's, but the style and the matchup is enough to just kind of make me wary about back in San Francisco there.
Yeah, we saw that number come down from 8 down to 6.5, and that's where we saw some buyback on St. Mary's there at 7. That's kind of where the market is floating now. How about the MAC? And I haven't bet the MAC a whole lot this year, but you've got your eye on this Ohio-Kent State matchup tonight.
Yeah, taking another home team, laying it. It's much, much closer spread here, -3.5. But I just think the Bobcats have been trending up. They had some injuries early in the year. They've gotten guys back in the rotation, Miles Brown most notably. And then Kent State has been a little bit of a mess. One of the preseason, you know, top 3-ish teams in this conference have not lived up to that expectation at all. They've been messing with their lineups. Chris Payton was supposed to be like potentially preseason player of the year in this league, and he's been coming off the bench, playing less than 20 minutes a game. It seems like Rob Senderoff just isn't satisfied with his team there. Now, they did just blow out Northern Illinois over the weekend by 38. Oh. And Ohio's lost a couple tough road games in a row. But again, I see this as kind of, all right, you get a little bit of inflated value there because of that monster win that Kent State had. And then 2 tough, tough road losses. I mean, Ohio losing by 2 at Toledo is no small effort. Yeah. I was very impressed by that. So getting them back home off those road losses against a team that maybe is feeling itself a little too much off a blowout. I like Ohio there, -3.5.
Good stuff, Jim Root, 3-Man Weave. Follow him on social media at Second Chance Points. Always great to check in with you, pal.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. A lot of great hoops coming up. I can't wait, man. It's our month. It's our time.
This is our month. And again, if you don't follow Jim and his work, they do such a great job handicapping, not just the top of the heap. Every team on the docket is certainly something to be said. Don't forget the MAC, too. They love to score points there in that conference. Great stuff, Jim. On the other side, we have a new Mock Draft from Daniel Jeremiah, great NFL analyst, revealing part two of his very long saga of mock drafts. We'll check in and maybe I'll disagree, maybe I'll agree. Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our daily best bets emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com. Thank you very much. I dropped my pen during that read, and Kelly throws, look, that's a great producer right there. Throws me a pen mid-read. Look at that. Plus full access to our exclusive betting slip breakdowns on every game, VSiN.com/pro subscribe today. What do you got,
Bud? I'm getting that one back, though.
Okay. Well, you can have it back. Because So as I was doing the read, I reached into my bag and grabbed the pen out. So I'm a fidgeter. I like to fidget. It is called nervous energy. When I'm hosting a show, it's like duck on the water, right? Duck on the pond. Up here, it looks very calm and normal. Underneath, it's like... And my hands, I'm a fidgeter. I fidget. So sometimes I'll be throwing my pen around to toss it across the room.
Yeah, you just tossed it across the bar.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. Somewhere down here. I'll get it later. All right. We can't use our hands for this next segment, though.
Oh,
only feet. Feet only, because we're bringing in Paul Carr, of course, does a great job for True Media Sports, the Expected Value podcast, and The Ringer, covering the beautiful game of football. We call it soccer here in the States, but you still call it football, right, Paul?
I call it soccer. Look, I was born and raised in America. I don't get bent out of shape over what people call it. We're all talking about the same thing. We know what we're talking about. Everyone just kind of get over yourself a little bit.
So refreshing to hear a soccer guy say, screw the football people. We're calling it soccer. Right. All right. So we have the Champions League. It is the round of 16 today, leg one. And some of that might be French or German or one of the other languages for you if you're not familiar with the sport. So first, fill me in on what the Champions League is and then talk about the difference between leg one and leg two and why that matters today.
I always equate it to the NCAA tournament in the sense that you're taking the best teams from all the leagues in Europe and put them in one big tournament. The difference is that it's stretched out over the course of the whole season instead of jammed into 1 month in March. So they have the group stage in the fall, September through December, and now the knockout stage has started up. And the first three knockout rounds are all two legs. So you play one game at home of one team, one game at home of the other team, and it's total score, aggregate score, as they call it. Most goals advances. So historically, the first legs have tended to be more conservative. Now, they changed the rules a couple years ago so that away goals don't count double. That's not the first tiebreaker. So we don't have, you know, as much data apples to apples wise to, you know, really calculate that. But the general rule is that these first legs are a little more cautious because, you know, you can't win in the first leg, but you could lose if you, you know, lose by four goals or something. The second leg's basically dead already. So that's kind of the general philosophy that people will take when attacking these first legs.
And it certainly helps today, of course, this being leg one, everyone is on a clean slate, so we don't have to worry about the aggregate score. But when we get to the next leg, what happened in the first leg absolutely becomes part of the handicap. But again, that is not something we have to worry about today. But let's get to the two matchups today. These start in a few hours. Again, these are afternoon, even morning time, depending on where you kind of are slated in the time zones there. Inter out of Serie A and Atletico Madrid out of La Liga matchup today. What do we got here?
I'm very high on Inter for this whole tournament. They're a runner-up last year. They're arguably the second best team going in Europe right now. They're just dominating Italy on the whole. They've won eight straight games, only two losses all season. And their offense is really good and their defense is really good. They've only given up 12 goals in the league this year. That's the fewest in any of the top five leagues in 25 games or so. At home, only six goals allowed in 12 home games, six straight home shutouts. So just a very strong defensive team that can also score. So to me, that adds up to, I like Inter Milan win to nil today. So win via shutout at plus 180. Some books, you may have to like parlay this as an Inter win and both teams to score. No, a lot of them will just have the straight up win to nil option as well. That should be in this price range. Atletico is, they're a decent team. They're not as good as they were two, 3 years ago when they won the La Liga title. So I think Inter's just by far the better team here. And at home, they don't concede goals. I think they win this one without conceding.
Mm. Yeah, the 2-0 bets are always interesting to me. People get confused by that, but it's just that team to win via a shutout. And it's it is a fantastic handicap if you think the defensive-minded club is going to prevail. The other matchup today is an interesting one. You think this one could be high-scoring. PSV plays in the Netherlands region, and Dortmund out of, I believe, the Bundesliga, correct?
Correct. Yeah. As soon as, and I was saying, you know, low scoring first legs is the general tendency. This one, I just don't see it. So PSV is rolling in Netherlands. They're in first place. They've scored 70 goals and only conceded 10. Now the Dutch league is notorious for being high scoring. So, but it's still an impressive number really on both sides for them. Only two losses all season for PSV. And Dortmund is, you know, they're a top four-ish Bundesliga team that isn't very good defensively. They're middle of the pack in the Bundesliga defensively, but pretty good offensively as Dortmund usually is. Both these teams tend to kind of the best defense is a good offense type of philosophy. So I played over 2.5 at -145. Obviously that's pretty juicy, but it's just hard to see this one being a tight game, given all the people involved. If you want to, if you're feeling bold, you want to play over 3.5 around +175. I don't mind it. Or if you're in a parlay spot, over 2.5 and both teams to score gets you closer to even money. So I think any of those are viable options. I kind of played a little more conservatively here, over 2.5 -145.
Good stuff. And the Champions League continues tomorrow. Of course, two more. A round of 16 matches. The first one, a team a lot of you know, casual soccer fans might be familiar with, Arsenal from the English Premier League, taking on FC Porto out of the Portuguese league, right? I'm just basically Porto is in Portugal, right?
Yeah. That's a good deduction there. Yeah. Porto is kind of a mid-major type of team.
Okay.
If you're equating to college basketball, where, you know, last year they probably should have beaten Inter Milan in the knockout stage here, but just kind of got unlucky. So they have years where they're really good. They won Champions League back, gosh, almost 20 years ago now, I guess it was. But they're not quite at the peak of their mid-major powers here. Their numbers, all their underlying numbers and their regular numbers, frankly, aren't as good as they were last year. They're third in the Portuguese league, a good distance off the pace right now. And Arsenal is, again, they're one of the top two, three teams in Europe so far. They're not, maybe not quite at Man City's level, but their defense is better. They're really just built on having the ball and not letting the other team score. And since Porto's not scoring like they were last year and in previous seasons, I think, you know, this game will go that way, where Arsenal, they're going to get some goals. You know, they put up 5 on Burnley over the weekend, and I don't think they let Porto get one. So again, go back to the win to nil. Well, +180, it's the same price here. Arsenal's on the road. There's a bigger gap between these two teams than there is in the first matchup we talked about, but Arsenal's on the road, so the price is still similar. So yeah, Arsenal win to nil, +180, best defensive team really in Europe so far this season. I think that is the dominant storyline here.
The other matchup you don't have a play on, but Napoli and FC Barcelona, again, especially Barcelona, a team that a lot of casual soccer fans might be familiar with. Any vibe for you on this game?
This is the old, you know, to use Gil's Megapod standard, I want no part of this game. If you told me either team won like 4-0, I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. And if somehow it's ended like 0-0, wouldn't really shock me either. Napoli won Serie A last year, but they're really kind of a mess right now. I think they're in 9th place, even though their underlying numbers suggest they should be in the top 3 or 4. And Barcelona's scuffling too. They got a lot of injuries. Gavi, probably maybe their best player in the midfield, is out. Their defense is kind of a mess. Just a lot of moving parts. Lewandowski's getting older and not scoring like he was. So they're both different degrees of a mess right now. And I have no idea what to expect from this one. So it's a stay away from me.
The Champions League futures market is alive and well. I see Arsenal here +550. Again, they do play tomorrow. But for the most part, Man City is kind of the dominant team at the top. Is it a collision course for Manchester City to win this thing? Or do you think one of these other teams, you got Bayern Munich right there, Real Madrid also kind of within shouting distance, and then a little further down the list, PSG and Inter?
Yeah, I mean, Man City is definitely, I mean, they're the number one team here. No one's going to argue with that. Beyond that, it's a little bit murky, because even if you think City is a little susceptible, especially if there's an injury, like who you're going to take is, you know, very debatable. I like Inter on the long shot here. I played them at +1800 a week or two ago, so you might be able to find a better price than the +14 or so, but that's the one I like. They have a little bit of a tough matchup here with Atletico, but I think they'll get through this, and I really think they're just playing so well. I think they're
second best team in Europe, like I said, right now. So getting, you know, plus 14, 16, 1800, whatever you can find on that, that's the way I would look if I'm looking for a future at this moment.
Paul Carr, True Media Sports, the Expected Value Podcast, and The Ringer does a great job covering the footy for us here on VSiN. We appreciate the time, pal. Good luck today.
Bet, Jared. Thank you.
Good stuff. Arsenal to nil, Inter to nil, and the PSV Dortmund over the next couple days of Champions League round of 16 leg one matches. Great stuff with the picks. I haven't bet Champions League yet, but I'm going to bet these today.
Yeah, I love it. I'll probably be, I'll be tailing
Paul. Nothing else Paul to do this today. Afternoon, right?
It's always the, Tuesday afternoon. It's always the handicap of golf for me. So it's great soccer on in the background. It's perfect. It's awesome.
You got a big golf tournament. What's the tournament this week?
Mexico Open. It's not going to be a great one this week.
So not a great one this week. So I take that back.
And then we go to Florida after that. So
the Florida swing is when things really heat up, right? Arnold Palmer, Bay Hill, Players Championship, all of that on tap in the month of March before they... I love... My favorite thing is when they start playing the Masters theme song during the college basketball CBS. Yeah. It just gets you right in the mood. It's so great. I love the niche sports, the soccers, the golfs. You know, you really find those people that understand it. And Paul Carr does a great job. All right, we'll wrap up a numbers game on the other side.